Hello, everyone. Last week, we lost Right Worshipful Brother Marty McCary. He passed away at the age of 56. In solemn commemoration of his memory, we are re-releasing the episode he recorded with us to honor his memory. He will be missed from his insight and outlook to his life, and we appreciate the time we had with him. He will be missed. Please join us in honoring his memory by re-listening to the episode that he recorded with us. Rest in peace, my brother.
Welcome to the Freemasons Podcast, coming to you live from Morningstar Lodge number 47. Leave your aprons at the door, my brother.
Hello and welcome to the Freemasons Podcast. I'm your host, Right Worshipful Brother George Mudry, and with me tonight,
Worshipful Brother Joe.
Worshipful Brother Ken.
And our guest tonight, we have the other district deputy bailed. So right now, if we were doing the battle of the district deputies, you're already winning.
Yay!
Yep.
Yeah, he had to work, so it ended up. But we have Brother Marty McCary, Right Worshipful, district deputy of the Grand Lodge of the State of Connecticut for District 3A, correct? You're in the north, right? North of
yes,
3rd district.
Correct.
Like Jon Snow in the north. But so tonight we're going to be asking you about your Masonic career and all that. But first, let's plug our things. We have Freemason Podcast. We have the Freemasons community page, which has gotten relatively funny. Vote Mudry 2020. And the FreemasonsPodcast.com. We sell shirts and all kinds of other stuff. But shout outs. We're just going to do a generic shout out to everybody.
We are unprepared.
We'll just do it with our beer. It's fine.
Okay.
We're so unprepared. Normally we have
kind of a splash of yours.
Yes.
We do a splash of alcohol, but you're going to be working tonight. So
yes.
We're going to give a shout out to everybody who liked our page. Again, we've kind of lost track with the 300 and so plus that just added on, and we're reaching 700, actually, right
You're
now.
We're actually at 699 right
we're,
now.
We're knocking on the door.
Who's going to be 700?
Am I down here? I
don't know. No, it's just it's the connection to the headphones. It's just how it is. Trust me.
Well, I mean, you guys sound fine. I can't hear myself.
You can't hear yourself? No, you're up same as us.
I can hear you loud and clear.
Yeah, okay. You're loud and clear. Trust me. But we are knocking on the door of 700 likes. Let's toast them. Brethren, right hand to arms.
To arms.
Ready.
Ready.
Aim.
Aim.
Fire. Good fire. Fire all. Together, brothers.
Viva. Viva. Viva.
Have it, man. Don't look at me like that.
Have it. I'm special.
I've been told that several times. Like hockey helmets.
Apple reviews. Actually, let me grab my phone. Where is it? We had another review on Apple, and maybe Joe, I think we had one on the review on Facebook. Maybe you could look that one up while I'm looking at the Apple one. Let's see here. We had a Apple 5-star review from Nathan9983. And he writes, funny and informative 5-star review. Greetings, brothers, from Nathan Davis here out in Western Sun Masonic Lodge number 91 in Wheelersburg, Ohio. I am new to the podcast and I love every minute of it. Keep it up. So mote it be. S-M-I-B.
Sweet. Thank you.
Another one. 5-star review. Awesome podcast from Fitzy3400. Very informative, very fun. As someone who is gathering information to decide about Freemasonry, I enjoy the banter and most times I'm laughing to myself while I'm on the road. This podcast, in Freemasonry for that matter, represents what I think friendship and brotherhood should be. Vivat, vivat, vivat.
Nice reviews.
Very nice reviews. Nice. So, let's toast them. Ken, lead it.
Yeah, well, Brethren, right hand to arms.
Arms.
Oh, wait, hold on. George isn't, or Joe's not ready.
I was going to fake it.
Yeah, whatever. Can't do that. We're live. There is no fakery. Ready.
Ready. Ready.
Aim.
Aim. Aim.
Fire. Good fire. Fire all. Together, brothers.
Viva. 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 Find that yet, Joe?
Nope.
But there's one other person that I want to,
Oh, I got it.
You got it. Fire away.
Nathan Davis recommends the Freemasons podcast. Amazing podcast. Greetings, brothers. Brother Nathan Davis here out of Western Sun Masonic Lodge number 91 in Wheelersburg, Ohio. Love the podcast. Very funny and informative. Keep it up. So mote it be.
So Nathan Davis. All right. Joe, lead it. You read it. Lead it.
All right. Right hand to arms.
Arms. Arms.
Ready.
Ready.
Aim.
Aim.
Fire, good fire, fire all. Together, brothers.
Viva, viva, viva. I got one more.
Uno más.
To our right worshipful district deputy who decided to come up here and play with us. Us band of heathens.
I'm taking so many shots of coffee here. You're going to be really jittery for work later.
He's got to work later, so it's perfect.
Yeah, you got to be up all night.
But, thank you very much, Right Worshipful, for coming up here and hanging out with us and talking to us and having fun with us. So, brethren, right hand to arms.
To arms.
Ready.
Ready.
Aim.
Aim.
Fire. Good fire. Fire all. Together, brothers.
Viva. Viva. Viva.
All right. So, let's get right into the meat and potatoes of this. Right Worshipful Marty McCary. Tell us about yourself. What got you started in Freemasonry, and where are you going from here?
Yeah. Well, what got me started is one of my coworkers was going through his, was actually a member of Harmony Lodge. And he, myself and Right Worship Brother Shane Dufresne were both working the desk one night, and we saw him going over the coded ritual. And so we asked, what is that? And how do you join? And we took the first step. So he was our recommender, recommended us into Lodge back in 2002. Mm-hmm. And we Shane and I both took our 3 degrees together. And from there, we both got into the line. Shane was a chair ahead of me. Mm-hmm. And we both progressed through the line up to the Oriental chair. Being, I was master of Harmony Lodge in 2010. Mm-hmm. And from there, I stepped right into the secretary's chair. So I've been secretary since, there's 9 years, past 9 years. Mm-hmm. Still am secretary. I've been a district deputy for the last year.
And a damn half. Good secretary he is.
And I don't know about that. I've been, district deputy for the last year and a half, finishing up my last half a year. And, I'm also thrice potent master of, the Valley of Waterbury Scottish Rite.
Ah, I forgot about that.
I'm also a member of, the York Rite Bodies out of Meriden.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also...
You were a chaplain when I was president of Blue Lodge Council.
Yes, I was chaplain of Blue Lodge Council. I'm also the treasurer of Zinda Grotto.
Jesus.
And I'm also a member of the Kaobin Shrine Club.
Wow, they really got you,
yeah,
huh?
So yeah, they really had me. So I'm just trying to space things out.
All right. So you were picked. You were brought into Harmony 42.
Yes.
How old were you?
38.
When you became a member of Harmony 42.
Yes.
Enter an apprentice degree. First thing I went through your mind. What the hell did I get myself into? What was
it? You know what? It was, what did I get myself into? And I mean, I had read a little bit about it. So I didn't know what exactly to expect. Mm-hmm. But I was very pleased with the degrees and the symbolism.
Right.
You know, that was explained through the degrees. I didn't really find anything scary or spooky, but like anyone else, you get the jitters.
Of course.
Yeah, we especially, had a, especially on that first degree, you know, you really get the jitters.
Our current master puked. That was my fault. I tortured him. Yeah.
Did he really?
Yes. He. You have to understand about Ryan, though. He's a Iraqi war vet. So when you put him in a weird situation where he's already got PTSD, and now you're asking him to do certain things prior to the degree, not really knowing. Plus, it didn't help that me and Phil were telling him that he's gonna have to ride a goat and all kinds of other stuff. So we pushed the envelope on that one. But what got you sparked into Freemasonry? Like, what was your interest? What drew you in?
Actually, the historical aspect more than anything. You know, you look at the founding fathers that were Freemasons, and it's amazing. It's amazing what they accomplished. They founded a country. Then you go to the Civil War, and you look at a lot of the Civil War generals that were Freemasons. And it's phenomenal. The history of men that have been Freemasons and the impact they've had on our society and our world is without compare.
Right. You've been to Gettysburg, right? You guys do a bus trip,
times,
right?
Yes. I've been there probably about four times in the last 5 or 6 years.
And yeah, we do. Harmony does it, right? It's a Harmony project, right?
It's the Gettysburg trip.
The bus. Shane did the bus trip.
It's usually like a Shane thing.
Yeah. Oh, it's a Shane thing. It's not a Harmony thing. He loves it down there, though.
Yeah,
he goes all the time. I've seen him like on Facebook. That's Wright Warshall Shane Dufresne. He was the Grand Junior Steward.
Yes,
Grand Junior Steward. He goes there all the time. He loves it.
We were just down there back in August, and we really didn't do anything Masonic per se. We just really did a lot of battlefield walks and battlefield tours. Shane has a good friend of his who's a licensed battlefield guide, so we wound up walking a part of the first day battles, and we wound up seeing a part of the battlefield that really no one's ever seen called the Lost Avenue, which is basically in the middle of 100 acres of private property. And, I mean, just phenomenal monuments. The one thing we didn't do that we usually do when we first get there is stop by the Gettysburg Masonic Memorial. And we didn't even get there this time, you know, because we were just...
I didn't even know there was one there.
Oh, yeah. It's
Is incredible. That the brother-to-brother
Yes, memorial? The brother-to-brother memorial. Yep. Yes.
Yeah, I've heard about it. I've never actually seen it myself.
It's phenomenal.
You became master of the lodge.
Yes.
So what was the most gratifying and toughest thing as master in Harmony 42, besides having to deal with Ken?
I don't think I was there yet.
No, Ken wasn't there yet.
I wasn't there.
Really? Yet.
Well, the toughest thing.
So you weren't even an itch in the a vouchers in.
No, it was 2011 or 2012.
He's just 20, a baby.
Yeah, 2012, I think, is when I was raised. Yeah. So it was probably, So this is pre-me.
Okay. You're a pre-me. So most gratifying thing and toughest thing you had as master?
Most gratifying thing, of course, was raising Masons. The toughest thing was having to do double sets of degrees every month because we had so many people coming in through the EMR system. We had to do 2 degrees every month to keep up with people. So we were doing a lot of work. And it's like we were putting through anywhere between 8 and 10, enterings, passings, raisings a month.
Yeah, we had
my year as a master.
We had 1 year, I think it was under Worshipful Brother Phil, and it was just boom, 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 boom. Every single meeting was a degree. It burns you out quick.
Yeah. Well, what we do is we just hold an additional special communication, so we'd wind up having 3 meetings a month.
Oof.
And it was just it was a long year.
Busy.
Yeah. Busy. Very busy.
That's when that once a month commitment that they tell you in the beginning. Yeah, it's once a month for 10 months. It's not a lot of time.
Realistically, if you think about it, though, it is once or twice a month if you don't partake in anything. You know, if you just stay a regular Mason, it's minimal commitment. It's not until you start taking officers' chairs and then you get sucked into appending bodies is where now your time is. Or, you know, you get dragged up here to podcasts and stuff like that.
Right.
Your time isn't
yours. And then you affiliate with another lodge.
Yeah, then you go and affiliate with another lodge.
Oh, I haven't done that yet.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
did you get blackballed?
I haven't handed it.
No, I'm getting my stones busted because I still haven't given him the petition
form. No, you actually did. I just haven't filled it out. It's in my backpack right now.
Oh, so I can pass it back to him now. Okay.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
You're good.
Just so you know, I'm in.
See what the standards are.
So, why did you stop at Chaplin for Blue Edge Council? Just ran out of time?
Basically, I ran out of time.
Ran out of time.
You know, it was just like I just didn't have time to do a lot of the things I wanted to do.
Yeah, it gets to be taxing sometimes. So you eventually were appointed. You became an AGM first, correct?
Yes, I was. I never AGM made... with Shane actually back in 2010, 2011. So I was AGM in my year as master,
right?
And then I was AGM during my first year as secretary as well. So it's like everything comes in.
Yeah,
clumps, it seems.
I never got to go the AGM route. I would have liked to have been an AGM, but what do we call the AGMs? Glorified taxi drivers
or drivers? Drive the car, hold the pins.
Yes.
So as AGM, basically, what did you do as an AGM?
The AGM,
and I'm asking not only for the show, but also my own personal thing, because I never knew what an AGM did. I used to just go, "You do that."
You had one.
The AGM does the introductions of Grand Lodge officers during official visits of the Grand Line to a district. So if the Grand Master comes, the AGM is actually supposed to do all the introductions of the Grand Lodge officers to line them up and actually do the introductions to Lodge or, you know, to whoever, whatever body.
Right.
As well as, you know, assisting the district deputy in the inspections.
I just also want to, in my... AGM stands for Associate Grand Marshal. For those who don't know, we say AGM, we give it the acronym and DDs, District Deputy, and all that. So after you were AGM, was there a lapse? There was a lapse.
Yes.
Because it was a couple others, and then it was...
Yes.
Who was after Shane? Was it...
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, Bert Hughes. Me, and then after me, it came Chip, Mike Adams, and somewhere along the lines. Again, there's two parts of our district. There's the north and the south.
There used to be three.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. There used to be three.
Yes, there was three. That was McQueen, I think, it was Grandmaster when he did three.
Yeah.
And then a Grandmaster later went and did it to Points of the Compass, and it got chaotic from there. But that's all a whole other story. So you became district deputy. You were appointed and picked as district deputy. And you oversee how many lodges?
Right now, five lodges.
Five, yeah. So it's pretty much the same thing. What are one of the toughest things about for you being a district deputy? What's one of the toughest things that you find either walking into a lodge and or just district deputy in general?
Basically, trying to break through the nervousness on the part of the brothers in the lodge. Mm. It's a district deputy. Oh no, you got to be on our best behavior. True, you know, we're all brothers.
Oh, we're all screwed then.
Yeah. You know, because you go into lodge and there tends to be a little bit of apprehension on the part of some brothers.
Mm-hmm.
It really doesn't have to be that, you know, because we're all brothers. You know, I've been through everything they've been through. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's just trying to relax the brothers in the lodge, you know, either during a visit or during an inspection.
So, a couple things I just want to add on to this is that, you know, and I'll say the same thing. I had two issues. Either they were nervous as hell or they stone cold hated the Grand Lodge. And they wouldn't, we'll talk offline. We'll talk offline about when I was DD. But it wasn't me. It's who I represented. But anyway, we're moving on from that. But that stone cold, like, who the hell is the Grand Lodge to come in here and tell us? And that's believe it or not, it's a stigma in some lodges. I dealt with it. And yes, the nervousness as well. But, you know, what the point that I was trying to drive at is that, you know, the district deputy, and realistically, doesn't have as much power as you think they do. Right. Like, everybody's going, oh, the district deputy's going to pull my charter. District deputy cannot pull charters.
Only the grandmaster.
Nope. Can't pull dues cards. The only thing that district deputy realistically does is report back. Right. So, and, you know, I've had a lodge that, and I'm sure you know of them, because you were down here in the south at one point, right?
Yes.
Yes, you were the same down here at 3B. Mm-hmm. And there's one lodge that refused to give up their trustee information because they figured it's an in-house thing. And realistically, I'm like, ring, ring, what do I do? And he said, nothing. They don't want to give it up. You know, okay. And that was the end of it. And it was done deal. So district deputy really doesn't have the power. So lodges shouldn't, or even masters, shouldn't really feel like, I mean, again, every state, every grand jurisdiction is different, but there's no pass or fail. Maybe you could talk about the inspections now. Like, there's no, when I was there, there was no pass or fail. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of like an overall health of the lodge.
Yes.
And is that the same still to this day?
Yes, pretty much. Pretty much. You know, and it extends into financial health as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is why they want a lot of the, you know, profit and loss and trustees information and things like that. And just to see where the financial standings of the lodge are to make sure that they're able to endure in future years.
And on top of that, it's not like they're going to, at least again, when I was district deputy, I don't know how it is now, every grandmaster changed thing, but when I was district deputy, it wasn't a matter of, oh, your lodge doesn't have money, we're going to come shut you down. It right. was, how can we assist you?
Yes, and how help can we you? Help?
Right. So, after district deputy, where do you see yourself going? Are you all set? Are you...
Well, let's see. After district deputy,
riding off into the sunset.
No. Actually, I would.
You're going to continue being secretary for the rest of your life. Right?
Yes. No. Yeah. Actually, I haven't reached a decision on the secretary's spot yet. But I would like to get involved with the York Right bodies because I went through the York Right degrees and just haven't been back because I haven't had the time. So I would definitely like to get involved a little bit more in York Rite and continue in my journey with Scottish Rite. And it's just both bodies are a lot of fun, and you meet a lot of great brothers.
Let's see here. So let's talk about secretary stuff.
Sure.
Woo-hoo. I'm a secretary. Have you picked your replacement? I already have. He just affiliated recently.
Really?
No freaking way.
Hey, wow, that's great.
No.
Well, we got three secretaries in the house.
I've got my hands full with my own. I've got one more year after this one, and then I'm done.
Well, here's the thing. Harmony Lodge has approximately 175 members.
Mm-hmm.
So as a lodge, we are a big lodge, and just keeping track of everything is just, it's a job. Right. It really is.
You said 175?
Yes.
I mean, you're also in Waterbury, too, so.
Yeah.
Which is a city. We're in little rural Seymour.
Waterbury has two lodges.
That's true, too. Are those all, how many do you have on an active night now?
25 will show up for active. Yeah.
Yeah, most of our people who are, you know, on the books, I think we got either 60 or 70 on the books. But they're all live in Florida.
We have quite a few.
Yeah, they're all down south. Yeah. We only have a couple that are up here. And have you done... Now, I don't remember. Whose job is it to do the 50-year pins? Maybe you could talk about that program.
The 50-year pin is usually done by the either the grandmaster or the Grand Lodge representative.
So it's not done by district deputies anymore. No. Because we started doing them, and then we ended up mailing them.
Right.
But... whatever. But you would like to talk about the program of the, what's the program that they're running that district deputies are really pushing? The Perfect Craftsman.
Perfect Ashler.
Oh, yeah.
And you can talk about that in the mentor one, sure. too.
Well, Worshipful Brother Ken here is a Perfect Ashler, so he could probably tell you a lot more about it than I
can.
He damn sure ain't a Perfect Craftsman, I can tell you that right now.
Not a perfect co-host
that's
either.
That's true. Yeah, no, it's...
You know, I'm sorry I missed it. I didn't get up there because I was at a Waterbury Regional Chamber event that one of our brothers in Harmony got. He was honored at he got the Malcolm Baldridge Award, Giuseppe Pisani. So I was there instead of being at the Blue Lodge Council. But so the Perfect Ashlar Award is a program designed by Grand Lodge. Actually, Most Worshipful Brother Marshall Robinson came up with it from a program from another Grand Lodge, from where I'm not really exactly certain. But it's basically a series of 10 things you have to do. And you have a choice of basically 15, but you have to visit lodges. You have to see each of the degrees. And you could start in the program once you are entered as an EA. And then you have a year after your raising to complete the program. So you have to visit a certain number of lodges in your district. You have to
it's like all kinds of like help things.
Right.
Like,
I think one of them is Masonic funeral.
Masonic funeral. You should go visit a Masonic widow or a Masonic brother. Elderly.
Help setting up the lodge.
Help setting up the lodge. Doing a lecture in lodge. You know, a lot of things like that. So it's a fun program, and it gets brothers involved and actually teaches them more about Freemasonry. The mentor program is a corollary to that program. And basically the mentor program, what it does is, you know, every brother should be assigned a mentor when they're, you know, going through their degree.
God, I hope he ain't one of these two.
So... Hey. So what a mentor does is a mentor will sit with the brother, and one of the things is the in the mentor program is you're supposed to review and explain the obligations of each degree. You're supposed to review and explain the landmarks of Freemasonry. And so, you know, in addition to traveling with your brother who is your mentee. So you travel with him, you know, you show him things, and it's basically teaching. So
you gonna make it?
No.
Ken knows CPR.
I do. Oh. So do you.
Oh well, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I prefer Ken. Help me, I'm choking.
He's also a police officer. I hope he just steps on your chest.
With a stun gun.
He's fighting. He's fighting. All right. So, what do you see that will improve Freemasonry from your eyes? Again, our three thing is what we're doing here. What do you see? How do you see to expand the craft and make it better, to bring in more people? What do you think we can do?
I think we have to reach out to the public a little bit more. We have to get a little bit more in the public eye, whether it one be through social media like we are doing here, or whether it be through community events like hat and coat drives, you know, for needy children, you know, canned food drives around the holidays, you know, things to get our name out, like the Valley of Waterbury does the dyslexia walk for the Learning Center up in Waterbury, and, you know, which also helps get our name out. So every Masonic organization has its own charity. I think Masonry in general, just we have to publicize ourselves a little bit more.
And next question. There's no doubt that Freemasonry is losing membership slowly but surely. How do you see, or why do you believe that is?
I believe that life today is not what life was 20 years ago, 30 years, 40, 50 years ago. There are a numerous amount of, distractions in our lives that didn't exist, you know, 50 years ago. So 50 years ago, you know, you had TV, you had radio, but you didn't have the all-absorbing things like social media that went through people's lives on a daily basis. You know, back in the 50s, 60s, there weren't a lot of things to do. Life was simpler, and you had less things to do. You had a smaller circle of friends, usually, because you didn't have...
You didn't have 500 the world. Followers.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I think Masonry back then was a little bit... I won't say simpler, but it was more more real.
Right.
You know, you went to Lodge and...
The original Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. You went to Lodge, you saw your friends. Mm-hmm. But now there are so many things that compete for everyone's time.
Yeah.
It's difficult. And that's why I think a lot of... We lose members.
Mm-hmm.
Because people don't have the time, you know, today. You know, people are working, you know, 2-3 jobs.
Mm-hmm.
They're working odd shifts, and it's difficult.
Right. So you got a couple questions. First off, do you know what our MOVE program is? Did you see that on Facebook, what we're doing, the MOVE program?
No.
Masonic Outreach for Veterans Everywhere. And it's, oh, wow. It's we're going to be going, basically we printed up, we have an artiste, Brother Peter Daigle from New Hampshire, mm-hmm. who wrote up a beautiful image. It's posted all over, I think, my Facebook, Joe's, Ken's. And we're going to be reaching out to different veterans hospitals, Fisher houses, in order to bring in veterans into the fraternity. And because, again, our whole thing was, and this is perfect. Oh, wow. This is perfect. So like, we get to talk about it too. Our hope is that, you know, when veterans come back mm-hmm. from the military and they're now in the civilian world, they lose that piece of brotherhood that they yes. felt in the military. And we're not claiming to give that completely back to mm-hmm. them. But it is a way to give a piece of it back to them. And, you know, part of it is, you know, veterans, there's veterans that come back and 22 of them die every day. Or I think the number is now 17, but we'll go with, you know, between 22 and 17 veterans die each day from committing suicide.
Still way too many.
And if we can bring them into a lodge and show them that there's a fraternity or brotherhood or brothers that will help them up and be with them and talk to them, and be part of something greater than themselves, hopefully we can turn that back. So that is our move. So Joseph Schultz, Worshipful Brother, Joseph Schultz asks, interesting programs, talking about the two programs that we have in the state. What do you think about that MOVE program? Do you think that's a...
I think it's phenomenal, outstanding. You know, I mean, I'm a military veteran as well, not wartime, mm-hmm. but I served in the Air Force as a law enforcement specialist over at Clark Air Base in the Philippines, or rather what used to be Clark Air Base in the Philippines, before Mount Pinatubo wiped it out. One of my grave disappointments in life is that I missed the volcano over there. I was already derosed.
Wait. Hold on. You said it wiped the base out. Why are you saying I missed it?
I missed it.
I'm disappointed I missed it. If you'd have been on the...
I already had a day to return from overseas. I was back overseas, and then the volcano blew up.
Did it immediately wipe out the base?
Well, yeah, pretty much, yeah. Well, not immediately after I left.
Oh,
it was
right.
Like about a year.
But if you were there, you wouldn't be with us.
No, yeah, I would have been there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. No one got killed or anything.
Okay.
Missed it as in it didn't.
I'm thinking of like the movie Pompeii, which is...
That's exactly what I... I'm surprised you know what that is.
I've seen it. With Jon Snow.
Can you spell Pompeii?
Pompeii.
Wow.
There's a shot collar. Give it to Joe. next question. Same brother, Worshipful Brother Joseph Schultz. He says he's from Delaware, and he says it's hard to get lodges to work together in our state. Any advice on how they can coordinate their efforts?
If they have Blue Lodge councils. If they have something akin to a Blue Lodge council... attending a Blue Lodge council, or mm-hmm. start visiting other lodges within your district and making connections with the brothers. That's the best way.
Mm-hmm.
Make connections and visit and get to know everyone.
See, and I think that's the key when we talk about losing members and competing for time. Mm-hmm. When you have brothers that are barely have enough time to attend their own lodge, they don't travel as much. And when you don't travel as much, you don't see what other people are doing. You don't get to hear those different ideas. You don't get to take other ideas back with you. And I think that's leading to that difficulty in coordinating efforts.
Right. So two things. Joseph Schultz is and his brother Greg are from Delaware. And what do we call them? The Legion of Doom, Brothers of Destruction, whatever. They're funny as hell. Hanson Brothers. So he says, go Chair Force.
You can say whatever you want back to him. By
yeah,
the
you. Oh, yeah. Fine. Listen,
you know what?
He can take it.
Listen, I was an Air Force grunt. I was a cop in the Air Force. So I went through Air Base Ground Defense training at Fort Dix, New Jersey, and yeah. So we had fun. I was a M60 gunner.
Matthew Butts says, "Thank you for your service." Another brother.
Thank you,
Chris Martinelli. I think you know him, right?
Oh, Chooch.
Now I got Joe complex. Botulism. As secretary of his lodge, what are his honest feelings about Grandview? For those who don't know what Grandview is, it's a, you know, there's no more minutes, or not minutes, there's no more monthlies. Everything is done automated through the computer. And why do some old-timer secretaries not like it?
All right. Well, I wouldn't consider myself an old-timer secretary.
Nope. Not yet. Even close. I've seen you use Grandview.
I am!
I like Grandview. It's a learning curve. It's definitely a learning curve.
I think that's why.
Yeah. It's definitely a learning curve, but there's a lot of good things in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you information right there when you need it. You could look up and find information right there when you need it.
As secretary. I'm a secretary as well, and you know, I'm super glad that they have Grandview. I like Grandview, and that's the reason being is because mm-hmm. I'm sick of going out and buying ink cartridges for my printer and paper every freaking mm-hmm. 3 weeks because I have to print off 1,000 things. Right. Everything is PDF now. You can write it right on there and fire it right back, exactly. So you don't got to do anything crazy anymore.
The rules and regs are right where you need them as
rules
a master.
And regs, everything.
Officers'
there.
Manuals. You can look up somebody's contact info if
exactly.
you have to get in touch
could
with somebody.
Could update all the contact info right there.
I freaking love it.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
That's interesting. Matthew Butts also says, we have masters and wardens meetings to really help communication between the lodges and the district in New York. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much like our Blue Lodge Council. Yeah. Same thing, except it's not just open to masters and wardens. Mm-hmm. It's open to...
everyone.
Everyone, yeah.
You saw Heath Moth's comment,
yes,
right?
Yes, we got another brother. Heath from down south says, Air Force security is kind of like Paul Blart the Mall Cop. Oh, I should have warned you.
Oh, wow, that's brutal.
They're not always that brutal to guess.
They take no they take no prisoners, though. That's
yeah, but,
they're a rowdy bunch.
Yeah, but Clark Air Base was real world stuff. We had
where is that again? The Philippines, you said?
Yeah, Republic of the Philippines, Angeles City. It was all real world stuff. We had intruders every night stealing, like they'd steal anything that wasn't tied down. We used to have rolls of concertina wire. There was a 26-mile wall, concrete cinder block wall, you know, 10 feet tall, topped with broken glass. And at the base of the wall, on the inside.
Intentional broken glass?
Oh, yeah.
To keep them off?
Yeah.
Like razor wire, yes. Almost to do.
Well, we had razor wire along the base.
Oh, wow.
The intruders would reach over with a hook stick and steal the razor wire.
Wow.
So, I mean, yeah, it was fun. That's and, awesome. You know, there were several coup attempts while I was there.
Oh, trying to take over the government?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a bunch of assassinations of Air Force personnel when I was there as well.
Any bunches of kids decide to try to storm the airbase to see them aliens? While you were there?
Yeah, there were no aliens at Clark Air Base.
That's what they want us to think.
Just pulled the rug right out from underneath me.
No, I'm sorry. No, I thought somebody else would have gone there by now.
I was heading that way. I'm out. No, you're good. I was actually going to say, what were like, and again, I was only a Lejeune, but what is like the criteria when they would break into the base or whatever?
We run them down and try to catch them.
Catch them?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, either with us on foot or, you know, send a dog or...
Right. I don't really know. On stateside, obviously, it's the same thing. They'll just grab you and beat your ass. But, you know, over in Iraq, they'll, you know, I don't know if they light you up, or even in the Philippines, if they'd light them up trying to break into the base.
Well,
or something like
that. No, we wouldn't. No one would get... There was no deadly force authorized for regular base.
Mm.
You know, the regular base, you know, housing areas or anything. But we also had the largest military working dog program in the military.
I'll take the bullet, thank you.
I think we had about 900 military working dogs.
Yeah, no, I'm good. I'll take the bullet, thank you. Getting your ass chewed up by a Malamaw? No, I'm good. Is that what they used? Or was
it was
I'm good. Thank you. Give me the bullet.
I think a Chihuahua could take you down. Yeah, it'd be really, really easy.
You're welcome. I'm
maybe
just,
a Jack Russell.
See what I'm doing?
Terrier.
I'm just filling the pool for you. Uh-huh. That's all. What was I going to say? So, while we're on that subject about aliens and everything, what are you thinking? If they end up doing this, I know they showed up. You know the part that pissed me off about this whole. I know we're getting off subject now, and you know what? We've pretty much covered it.
Because that never happened.
Well, they stood around too. They didn't just show up.
No, they showed up. You know what pissed me off more than anything about seeing the picture? It's show us the aliens, and then there's a flag of North Korea right behind them. Like, what the hell does that have to do with aliens?
Randoms.
It's just,
you know,
random
just,
shit.
Yeah. Maybe they're thinking about the wrong aliens.
You know, we're gonna show up to a fully operational military base.
They're like nihilists,
and they're
like,
gonna show us the aliens. No, they're gonna shoot you in the face. That's what's gonna happen. Like, you can't just walk into Lejeune or walk into Pendleton and be like, "Hey, show us the helicopters or something like that." They're going to shoot you, probably tase you, loose the Malamaws, and you're done. Like.
All right. So, I don't think there are any aliens. Don't believe in it.
Not an alien believer, huh?
Nah, don't believe it. Yep. You know what?
I didn't believe until Joe joined the podcast. And now I'm like, nah, full-fledged.
So, you're saying gingers are aliens? We're like the reptile people that live under the ground, like that kind of thing?
Translucent skin wrapped over an alien frame. Like,
if we're talking about translucent skin, he just turned the guns. He just turned the turrets right out.
He's like Predator. He'll disappear right in the woods. He'll just camouflage himself.
So we were up here for a podcast one time, and Ken was wearing shorts. And somebody who was watching live made a comment about his legs. He's like the Predator.
I don't get a lot of sun.
So Heath Moss, he also says, Navy Security Force Senior Chief Master at Arms.
Oh, that's what he was.
Oh, that must have been what he was.
So that's why he's taking shots. That's why he's saying, hey, he's pulling the, hey, it's okay, I'm Italian, I can make a joke. That's what he's doing. It's okay, my best friend's Italian. I can
what
make
does a Navy Security Force do?
Like, Navy Security Forces is pretty much, I believe, the same type of thing.
They're just guarding like aircraft carriers.
Security forces, yeah. The Marines had the security forces as well. They were some bad mothers too, man.
Like Team America.
Like no, like they had the seen them a couple times when they were training. They had the riot shields, mm-hmm. and they would all move like a Roman legion,
like a Roman
like just.
That's moving intimidating. Right. Yeah. You don't want to see that coming for you.
No. And I don't remember if they had a side. I think they had a sidearm, but they didn't use. It was basically a giant billy club, and they would just beat your ass when they got close to you, or they would just smash you with the shields. I seen them a couple times. It was pretty wild. All MWD are trained by Air Force. Great program. What the hell's MWD?
Military Working Dogs.
Working Dogs. Yeah, that now makes
actually,
sense.
I had the opportunity to be a handler, and when I was done with Air Base Ground Defense training at Fort Dix, mm-hmm. it was like the end of November, mm-hmm. and it was a choice, do I go home for the holidays, or do I go be a military working dog handler? I said, I'm going to go home for the holidays. So I should have been a handler.
I'd be worried about the sumbitch turning bad on me.
Oh, they do.
Piss them off. Just do something.
Yeah, do they turn on their handlers occasionally?
Yeah.
Take your dog, take his dog bone, him just. All right, I'll take your forearm instead.
Scary.
Well, you just know, walking it, off you just know, with an arm like this in his mouth.
Yeah.
Like Siegfried and Roy.
It's strange because with police working dogs, you know, the cops take their dogs home. They're, you know, they have a 24/7 bond. With the military, it's the military working dogs go out for a shift. And then they go back to the kennel. So there's I think, less of a bond with a military working dog than there is an actual police working dog. That's just my observation.
I don't know if I'd agree with that, though. They should stay with their handler. They really should, like, to build that bond and all that stuff. You know, same as police officers. They take them home. They're home dog, you know.
But, you know, if you're living in the barracks, you can't.
True. The only other thing is too is that I think police dogs are more deal with everyday people, whereas military dogs don't. They're going out to perform a job, which is eat somebody's ass.
Exactly.
Whereas, you know, canines have to kind of
They have a fine line to walk.
Yes.
Would you want a dog that's trained to do that? To do that in job? You know, like eat the arm off of somebody that has a freaking AK-47. Do you want them sleeping next to you in the barracks?
Joe Schultz wants them as Tyler.
Right. Dog beds.
Well, you also have to run the opposite end of this. I know we're getting totally off the Masonic topic, but that's fine. The other opposite end of that is, do you want that same military dog to become accustomed to being petted and people talking to them? Now you've softened him to perform that job. You know, if you're taking him out in combat, you know, that dog, much like somebody who is in the military, if you're out in combat, you're looking at everybody. You're not, you know, thinking, you know, because realistically in combat, you can have an 8-year-old pop up with an AK and light your ass up in combat. Whereas police, you're not so much going to get that.
No.
So I can understand, I guess, the separation of trying to keep them hard.
Oh, also, in the Air Force, we did not have barracks. We had dormitories in the Air Force. So just so you know, we had no barracks. We had dorms.
Dormitories sounds nice.
So we had dormitories.
Yeah. I had those in college, too.
You know, somebody once told me, it's like, if you had to do it all over again, what would you do? I'd say, I'd go Air Force because they get paid better.
And the food's better.
And the food's better. And you're not sleeping out underneath a sea hut. You know, just two pieces of fabric and two sticks just laying in the mud like, this sucks. Joseph Schultz says, we should keep dogs as Tyler's.
That'd be cool.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine?
That brother hasn't paid his dues.
He doesn't have the right grip or word. Just a dog.
I don't like that idea. Just start a program.
Heath Moss said, he goes, I've been on the both sides exactly. And he said, in exactly, the bond is totally different in the military. Chip Schofield joined us. I went to his retirement party yesterday.
Hey, I did too.
Chip. Oh, you were up there?
Yeah, I had to leave around 2 because I had to go to a nephew's birthday party.
We had Morningstar's car show. And then I had some badass babies at home that were flying all over the place. So I had to go home.
Like Marty and Shane were on shift 1, and then the rest of us showed up for shift 2.
I caught you on the way out.
Yeah. So he had visitors all day long.
We had some funny jokes while we were up there. We had a good time up there.
Yeah.
Cracking jokes. They made, who made the joke? I think it was Danny Sharkus made the joke about me sitting at the old table, the old bench table that was in the back up there. And I'm sitting there, and he's like, look at you. He's like, perfect bench for you. He's like, old. I said, yeah, but it's not short. It's tall. Like, it's funny. I don't remember the exact contents of the conversation. We had a good time up there at his retirement. Yeah, and again, happy retirement. How much longer you got to go?
I don't know. When I find another job.
Oh, you're just hanging out right now?
Yeah, just hanging out right now. I got to find another job, then I'll leave. Maybe.
Another job with a pension, with benefits.
Yeah.
Collect them both. Good to go.
Yeah. Get a Shane gig. He's got a good gig going now.
He always has a gig going somewhere.
All right. So I don't have any other questions. That's all I can think of. Cool. So thank you for coming up here and hanging out with us. And
thank you for the invite.
Absolutely. And next time,
pleasure.
We'll have you up here again with Mike, and then we'll do the trivia back and forth, and we'll see who the better district deputy is.
With the shot collar?
It's up to them. See, the only problem is, here's the problem, though, okay? Mike, I'm not worried about. We'll shock him all day. But Marty's a police officer, and his shock collar is a hell of a lot better than the one we got.
Play with that.
We'd be sitting here.
I'd love to see you. I would pay good money to see you get tased. I would give so much money to charity.
I have a better idea.
All right.
We bring our AGMs.
Uh-huh.
And if we answer the AGM,
I like it.
That's even better.
Yes, AGMs have to come up as well.
Let's make this happen.
We'll make this happen. If the district deputies get it wrong, the AGMs get popped.
Yes. Yeah.
But now we're going to up the ante, though.
Uh-oh.
If they get shocked, well, they're going to be wearing the shock collar, but they have to stand in a bucket of water.
So this is Danny and Steve, right?
Yes.
Oh, wow. This is going to be so much fun. Can't wait.
Or maybe I could find on Amazon a kettle prod. That'd be even more fun.
No, we can't kill anybody.
All right. So
we don't have a general liability policy. I would advise
you. You have one other question. Yeah. Worship Brother Joseph Schultz, any military lodges in the Philippines?
You know what? That I do not know. I wasn't involved. I wish I was when I was over in the Philippines. There may have been, but nothing that I recall seeing.
There had to have been, because all I think about is MacArthur.
Right. Actually,
he was Mason in the Philippines. That's where he was raised and everything.
I visited MacArthur's grave in Norfolk, Virginia. And actually, General MacArthur was made a Mason at sight. So he actually didn't go through all the degrees, but they did have his shrine fez and his apron.
Very cool. In Norfolk,
that's awesome. It was
really cool to see.
Mike Adams said he's not answering any of them right. This is the whole point of this. Mudry 2020. So, our artist, we did our last episode, we did on how Freemasonry could improve current politics of the world. So, I had our artiste go out and actually make campaign pictures on our Facebook.
And we did a really good job,
too. He did. He did Mudry 2020. It's pretty funny.
Scary good.
Yeah. All right.
I think he's going to have to be the official campaign artist.
Yeah. Well, I've already basically.
It's not too late. I mean, we're starting one campaign after another. We can't even complete one that we start, and you've already, now you're running for president. Sorry, guys. Here, handle the move campaign.
Joseph Schultz says the bitching was unbearable. Well, then you ain't going to like this one either.
Nope.
Because we're going to be doing some bitching up here. Not necessarily bitching, but...
It'd be funny if...
storytelling.
Peter Daigle could put together a little thing of Puppet George and the dude from I'm Just a Bill. Remember on the weekend special stuff that the I'm Just a Bill...
Yeah, yeah. The old, like, the civics lesson. The civics cartoon.
Schoolhouse Rock. Yeah, Schoolhouse Rocks.
Yep.
Old.
I remember it. I mean, I saw it on rerun, probably.
I repeat...
I know what he's
You don't remember
about.
Schoolhouse Rock?
Old.
Jackass.
I mean, they played it in school. I'm sure it was an original in the 1980s, early 90s when I was in school. But I remember seeing it.
When God said, let there be light, Joe handed him the match.
You're lucky your kids are here.
I'm surprised he knows
how to use
the
effects
processor.
I bring them in. I give them popcorn. Make the kid keep his shirt on.
God, I don't know what he's doing.
Treats in the corner.
He's doing the floss in the other room with his shirt half up.
I'm trying to look at Marty. I see him behind him, like, lifting up his shirt. Like, what the hell? I can't even look at him.
All right. Let's do another episode. This one is going to be on the Master's Word. We just got finished our last episode, so we're going to send out a two-parter right here. What we didn't cover was Washington's Rules of Civility. For Freemasons and in Lodge, and this is a book about Freemasons, Washington's Rules of for Freemasons Life in the Lodge, and it's just different things pulled out that pertain to Masons off of the Rules of Civility and Decent Behavior book that he wrote a long time ago, something politicians should have read. But the next one we have is actually After Lodge. So we now passed the etiquette in Lodge, and this is now After Lodge. And Washington says, number 105, be not angry at the table, whatever happens. And if you have reason to be so, show it not. Put on a cheerful countenance, especially if there be strangers. For good humor makes one dish of meat a feast. What did I say wrong?
Nothing. I just smiled at Marty because he's a guest. I put in a cheerful countenance for him. That's all.
So who are you angry at then?
I'm not angry at anyone.
Well, Washington's basically saying, if you're pissed off at dinner, don't show it to anybody.
Don't show it. Keep the feelings buried deep down inside and, you know.
Go home and piss and moan in your car on the way home.
Yeah. That's not psychologically
I'm not that
healthy.
Good at it. I like to just get it out at the table.
Yeah, it is better for you that way. But it
you just don't
want
to be the guy sitting there eating, like, stabbing the hell out of your food when you're pissed off. But, no, good advice, though. He says, that is to say, when dining with others, never show anger, even if you have just cause. Encourage everyone to be happy, most especially strangers, and for a good time, maybe even if the food is poor or sparse.
Sparse.
Whatever. They make fun of my English etiquette as well.
Yeah, Marty may have listened to an episode.
Yeah, I don't know. The spelling bee one was pretty funny.
That was pretty funny.
We do have to do another one of those.
Yeah, they set me up. But this one we're going to be talking about a Mason's Word. And I don't mean words as in the ones I can't say or spell. Mason's word. What does it mean? So one of the things that Masons do is we keep our word, especially to each other. So, for instance, like Joe had the farm degree a couple of weeks ago, and he asked me if I would be, you know, a particular part in the degree, and I said, yeah.
He's going to make it about him.
Who? Me or him?
You.
No, no, I'm giving an example.
I know.
And so Joe had said, hey, can you do this part? And I said, yeah, I'll do that. But, you know, a Mason keeps his word, and I mean, what would it make me look like as a person or a Mason if I would have just no called, no showed, and then just been like, yeah, sorry, man, got busy.
Yeah, no, and it's one of those things where, you know, it used to be a big thing in society in general where once you gave somebody your word and you shook their hand, you know, it actually meant something. And
gentleman's agreement.
Yeah, and that's kind of been lost over the years, but in Masonry, that was one of the things that still held true. That was a tradition, just based on our obligation and our oath to one another. If I give you my word, I'm going to stand by that. And that's one of the things that attracted me to the fraternity. And when somebody takes that and breaks it, not only does it make them look poorly,
right?
And it's un-Masonic, it's unbrotherly. But if it happens to you enough, and it happened to me with quite a few people at the farm degree that you just mentioned, it starts to shake your faith in the fraternity. And that's the thing that probably gets me the most, is you're not just no-showing and making my work more difficult. You're hitting me at my core. You're taking something that I've put my faith and my belief in. And even if it's just for a small second, you're making me question that.
Right.
And you know, you get over it, you get through it, you realize it doesn't represent the craft as a whole.
Right.
But you know, it really hits home when somebody breaks their word to you, and you're like, "We're supposed to be better than that. Right. We're not the common man. We're not the everyday person. We're not some businessman who may be a little unscrupulous, or the president of the United States who gives you their word and then breaks it. We're Masons.
Right.
That's supposed to mean something, and it's." You feel betrayed. That's probably the best word I can I can use to describe it. It's a betrayal. But you know, you move on. You try to associate yourself with people that don't do that. But you're betraying yourself. You're betraying another brother. You're betraying the craft.
And you know, every group has them. Every group has them. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, Masons or politicians, or you know, it doesn't matter whatever group it is. You're just, it's going to happen from time to time. Masons just make a point to not do it as much, or do it at all if we can't help it. So I've had situations myself where I've been burned a couple times, and you know, not that I held it against them, but I mean, I guess for me it's like, at what point does it or should it ever be a Masonic offense? I mean, you take an oath on a Bible to each other, and you will go out of your way to do certain things, you know, to assist the brethren. So is that, in a sense, a Masonic offense? Opinions?
I think it can be. If there's some type of harm done because of that.
Right.
Yeah. Let's say, for instance, people that were going to come show up and help me clean up the farm and do everything after the degree, and they no-showed, and we had two or three people. Well, what if somebody got hurt because there weren't enough people there to help out? You know, maybe something like that. Maybe it's something more egregious than that, where, I don't know, if you take a part in a degree, you say you're going to do it, and you just don't show up, or you call an hour before and say, yeah, I'm not going to make it. Not that you had an emergency, not that, you know, something unexpected truly came up, you're stuck in traffic, highway's shut down.
Right.
Yeah, that is what it is. Yeah, not feeling it tonight. I won't be there.
What do you think, Ray Warshall?
I think a Mason's word is his bond. So once your word is given on something, you have to be true to your word. You know, accepting things like one a family emergency, or things of your usual vocation that can't be avoided, that you know that you have to attend to. Other than that, your word has to be your bond, and you know it's among the brethren. You have to be known as a man of your word.
Do you think it's a punishable Masonic offense, or are you on the fence on that one?
I don't think it would be a punishable Masonic offense. But I think the punishment would come through the fact that brothers knowing that you're not a man of your word, and they would be aware of that.
Right.
It might be a good opportunity for whispering good counsel, I think, first and foremost. Yes. I'm going to steal some of Danny Sharkus's thunder because I thought he was going to be up here this evening. But
go for it.
His father, and you probably know this story about Right Worshipful Brother Dave, the poster that he has in his office or had in his office in his previous job.
No.
So
no.
he's got a really nice representation. It's just been described to me. I haven't actually seen it.
Mm-hmm.
But he described it as it's two men shaking hands, and one is wearing a Masonic ring. And it says something like, "Do you remember when a handshake used to constitute a binding contract?"
Mm-hmm.
And it says, "To a Mason, it still does."
Right.
And that's the only like real Masonic thing that he had in his office.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he had that in his place of business to let people know, if I give you my word,
right.
Yeah.
I'm going to follow through.
Right.
I thought that was really cool.
It's a tough thing. And again, you kind of, it's hard to draw a line, for me anyway, between a Mason's word and the oath that he takes to each other. Mm-hmm. This also goes out in public, you know, because if you take that same Masonic word, you know, like, I give you my word, I'm going to do this, and you'd apply it to the civilian life or, you know, whatever the case may be, you know, hey, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that, and then you don't, it could potentially bring shame on the fraternity. Well, don't mess with Masons because they're dirty dealers. So it's across the board, especially if you're mm-hmm. one to wear Masonic hats or rings or anything, or even express that you're a Freemason. And, you know, yeah, don't deal with him. He's kind of a dirty dealer, you know. So you got to think about that everything you do, everything you say could potentially either help or harm the craft as a whole. You know, again, even our car show. If we did our car show yesterday, and we told the school, hey, we're going to come do a car show, we're going to raise all kinds of money for you, and do this, that, and the other thing. And what if we just pulled the plug at the last minute? Like, yeah, no, never mind. These kids went and made these big trophies, and they were all prepared for it. And then if we went and yanked the plug on them, it makes us look bad. Yeah. You know, and it's another form of breaking your word. It's
conduct unbecoming of a Mason.
Right. I wish it's something that would be applied more in life, you know, or being able to trust somebody's word on something. It's kind of a lost art.
Absolutely.
It really is. No, I believe, I don't know if it's true, but isn't it still in the state of Connecticut, a verbal contract is considered a contract, or is that not anymore?
I don't know. I think to a degree, but to what the degree the courts hold a verbal contract as opposed to something written is changes, right. I think.
Right. Oh, I thought, I don't know where I heard that from.
Just by virtue of the fact that everything kind of has to be ink on paper these days. I mean, I don't remember. Mm-hmm. You think about like all of the official things that you do, like when you're buying a house, you're opening a bank account, or you're doing any kind of transaction, business or anything like that, you have to. There's always a contract. Maybe verbal contracts could be binding, but
it's just
pen on paper always is.
Yeah.
So
right. we got all a case of the coughs up here today.
Joe's dying.
Ken's dying. Marty's over there coughing. I'm coughing.
Good thing it's going around the room, though. It's not everybody at
once. Right.
It's nothing big. It's just a small case of consumption. That's all.
Yeah, that's all it is.
A little consumption.
Just a touch.
What the hell is consumption?
Tuberculosis.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking consumption.
No. The other consumption.
One of my favorite degrees of, and it falls right into this master's word thing, is actually the Mark Master Mason degree, for those who have taken it.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who know or maybe don't know, at the end of the degree, you're given a Mason's mark, which is it's a little coin that you put your mark inside the middle of the coin. And it's, what is the equivalent of one penny or something like that? But it was basically explained to you that if you were to give, like, I need $500 and I give you this coin, that's like a symbol of my word that I'm going to pay you back. Yep. And you hold on to my mark as a ransom until I think it's paying back plus one penny or something like that.
It's the ultimate IOU.
It's the ultimate IOU, but it's not even the fact of the damn coin, because the coin don't mean anything. It's
the word.
The coin is the word and the promise behind it.
Yeah.
Is that, and I love that whole concept of like, here, I'm going to give you my mark, and that right there is word that I'm going to pay you back for whatever, mm-hmm. or you know, whatever the case may be. And I thoroughly love that degree with it, you know, because it's actually, you could say, take all the degrees in the planet and, you know, giving each other the word. Yeah, hey, Marty, I'm going to do this for you. Hey, I'm going to do this for you. And yeah, it's a word. But to actually have a physicality right. of that word, that was impressive to me. That was one of my favorite degrees in Freemasonry, just off of that fact. Who's taking that, by the way? Not you.
Not me, nope.
All of us. It's not Joe.
Hey, I'm a member of Morningstar, you're not.
Fair point. I'll concede the point.
That's right.
That's all I had, I'm sorry.
Which, by the way, I got to give you a dues card for. One of the other things that drives me bananas as a secretary is when you send out that dues letter. That very first dues letter. Mm-hmm. Now, dues in itself is a promise that I'm going to be an upstanding member of this lodge. It's held in your charges, I believe.
Yes.
That you will be... Yes. You will remain true to your dues to your lodge and all that stuff. And there's nothing worse than sending out that dues letter and hearing nothing. That drives me crazy.
It drives me even more crazy when you get the phone call. Said, I'll take care of it. Don't worry.
Right.
I'll send you something. And then you hear nothing. Right. I'd rather hear nothing at all, because then I can think, well, maybe they didn't get it. You know, maybe... They moved, and I don't know. But when they call you and acknowledge it and then blow you off afterwards, like, come on, man.
Then you got to send them the second nasty gram.
I know where you live. Like,
then the third nasty gram.
Then the third nasty gram.
I'm on my second round of nasty gram.
Now you're on the phone calls.
Dues, just pay them.
Well, right. It comes down to all due signs and summonses.
Yeah, right.
That's what it comes down to.
Right.
And that's where it is.
So let's break down different things that could be considered a Mason giving his word. So we've already covered the dues one. Mm-hmm. How about RSVPing for dinner?
That's just never going to happen.
That will never happen.
We're talking crazy now.
That is not a Masonic offense.
You'll do like a dinner. Hey, we're doing a degree on such and such a night. Dinner's $20. RSVPs needed. How many RSVPs we got?
Three.
I think we have RSVP required as an asterisk on all of our degrees and our trestle board, and we get maybe two guys who consistently RSVP.
But how many show up?
Like 30 sometimes. And like, you know, we're Masons. You would think that the least we could do is like say, yeah, we're showing up for dinner. It's very
You know how
simple.
Much of a pain in the ass that is to sit there and be like, how many guys are showing up? Well, I got three RSVPs. Just order food for 30. Just order food for 30.
That's what we do. We go based on averages, usually. So for like a state of communication, we'll do like 25 headcount, you know, 25 meals, and then 30 or 35, I think, was the last number we did for degrees.
I mean, it doesn't happen on a regular basis, but the other end of it is, too, is, yeah, I'm going to show up for dinner. Oh, okay, cool. You RSVP'd. Awesome. And then the food comes out, and they're like, oh, man, I just ate at home.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch.
Nope, it happens.
But
it's even worse. Like for state of communications, it's one thing. Mm-hmm. You know, lodges have table lodges where they're really putting out a nice spread, and getting that accurate head count is key. Because if you get 10 guys at $20 a head that say they're coming and they end up not coming,
right.
That might be $200 that you just spent. Easily. That might be your profit for the night.
That cost your lodge.
Right. So at this point, you're taking from a fundraising event and actually costing them money versus contributing to it. So
you know, I'd love to put this out to the community and say, if any of you guys out there have some kind of system in your lodge or in your jurisdiction that you find works well for RSVPing, like you guys got you have that problem solved, please by all means let us know.
Right.
Because here in Connecticut, we'd love to know.
Yeah,
so right worshipful Mike Adams is actually live right now. I just want to throw this out there that we are not talking about you, right worshipful Mike Adams.
No,
he's at work. We're not talking about you.
No.
We still love you, bro.
And we've actually we just rescheduled to have him come up here and roast his AGMs. And when I mean roast, I don't mean make fun of. I mean literally
with electricity.
Yes,
yeah. Like me at that salvage yard that day. I got lit up by 7,000 volts.
Have you told the story about that? About why you have a doctor's note? And
I don't know if I've told it on air.
I don't think you have.
You've always said you have a doctor's
note. Yeah, you've always said you're a doctor. So, let's hear about it.
This was about 2 years ago. I was in, where was I? Mendon, Massachusetts at a salvage yard. I work for an insurance company. Occasionally we go to a salvage yard where all of our total loss cars go, and we check to make sure that we're paying people the right amount of money for their total losses, stuff like that. And this salvage yard is surrounded by an electrified fence.
Mm-hmm.
And there's signs all over, don't touch it, don't lean up against it, blah, blah, blah. But it's never active during the day. It's only active at night when the place is closed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on this particular day, unbeknownst to us, they had somebody out testing the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And the fence was actually on.
Right.
I was trying to look underneath a car and backed up so I could get a better look at the underneath of the car,
mm-hmm.
and hit a live fence, 7,000 volts. Now, this wasn't one of those things where, the way the fence works, it's on a trickle charge. So it slowly charges up, and then it holds that charge.
Yeah.
And as soon as something hits it, it dumps that charge all at once.
Senator Zanino, I have a question.
Yes.
What part of your body would you say interacted with the fence that day, that fateful day?
It was my entire back, buttocks, and back of my legs.
Ah, okay.
So I backed into it, and it was like a bunch of, you know, every foot or so, there's another wire.
You shocked your ass.
I shocked my entire body.
No further questions.
For the record, I never went down. I stayed on my feet the whole time. I did black out momentarily.
Wow.
It melted a hole. I had like a tech material shirt on. It melted a hole in the back of my shirt.
I don't mean to laugh. I'm sorry. It's funny as hell.
I'm here. That's how I got magic powers.
What did you say? What words came out of your mouth?
So one thing about it, and anybody who's ever had this happen to them, it doesn't feel like sticking your finger in a socket. It doesn't feel like our shock collar.
Mm-hmm.
When that amount of voltage goes through you, it feels like somebody came up with you with a baseball bat and just hit you in the back as hard as they freaking could. So the funny thing is, I'll tell you exactly what I said, but before I tell you that, mm-hmm. standing next to me at the time.
Was it like you were like mid-conversation and you were just like, yeah, so I'm looking at like you're just getting nailed.
Imagine you're sitting there talking to somebody and somebody were to come up to you and just hit you in the back with a baseball bat as hard as they could. I'm standing next to my boss's boss, so the guy who's in charge of everything in all of New England. So when I come to, like I was like out on my feet, which I didn't know. This is what people were telling me, and they grab me before I go back into the fence again. But at that point, the charge had completely dumped into me.
And Joe's like, something bit me.
No.
I jumped up and bit me.
Even worse. I come to, and I'm like, mother effer, what the F? And I am dropping curse words and F-bombs like you read about. And my boss's boss is as close as Ken is to me right now. And then finally, he puts his hand on my shoulder and goes, are you okay? And I'm like, what the F? And I'm going nuts. And he's like, I think we should call an ambulance. I'm like, I'm going for a walk.
No, you should really seek medical attention.
I should have, yeah. But I never did.
Did you pee yourself?
No, I kept all bodily fluids in.
Wow, that's impressive.
I didn't even take a knee. I might have staggered a little bit, but I took it like a champ. And
I took an itty whack from that. I almost peed myself. I hurt like hell.
But at this point, I still didn't know what happened. Mm. And then I'm thinking in my head, did a tire fly off the back of a tow truck or something and hit me? Because it really felt like a blunt force impact, like that you couldn't even imagine.
In this case, is why we don't pee on electric fences.
Yes, yeah. I would not recommend that. But we have a good laugh about it now, and some people at work, like when we put on a presentation and they shut the lights out, they're like, "Oh, Joe's glowing." And that's where, way back in the early days of Discord, I posted something about my superpower shooting lightning out of my arse.
Yes, you did.
Because you can probably do it.
That's where I... That's.
So that now, do you get afraid during thunderstorms?
No. No, I'm good. But it could be
do you why sing we, the? Do you sing the song?
No, I don't. The
what Thunder song? Buddies?
F you, Thunder. But it could be why we have some electrical issues here with our cameras and stuff. Maybe I'm... Yeah. Causing some
can you do the under? Like can you do the Uncle Fester where you put the bulb in your mouth and?
I just don't put it in my mouth.
Put the bulb, just the light bulb, just an empty
just,
light bulb in your
I
mouth.
I can, but I just don't use my mouth.
He puts it somewhere else. That's where he's going. Oh
my God! All right, I get it.
But yeah, so that really happened a couple years ago. That is why I cannot participate in shock collar trivia.
What were you talking about right before though? Like what was the words that were coming out of your mouth?
We were talking about whether or not the rocker panel was rusted to the point where we should have taken a deduction for the value of the car type of thing. So I was like, oh, let me take a look and get a
we gotta get a clip of that.
I'm setting him up for a commercial. We didn't realize
it. I don't care.
Joseph Schultz said, of course,
I'm not editing any of the episodes until I set the commercial.
We could do an attorney. Rafferty and Sons. Have you been shocked by an electrified fence?
No. I'm going to actually give up the audio clip of what happened at the salvage yard.
Oh, you're gonna, doing the...
Mother!
No, but in all seriousness, so you just don't even mess with the shock collar at all. So.
I don't mess with any electricity anymore. I don't even plug in the Christmas light.
Really?
Yeah, I just...
Who do you charge your phone?
I'll plug that in. I need my phone, but I'll wear, like, rubber gloves.
It's only, like, 5 volts.
Seriously?
No.
Oh. Well, I don't know. Joseph, I'm just saying, if I got attacked by a shark in the ocean, I'm probably not swimming in the ocean again. Just throwing it out there.
Well, every time I go to one of these salvage yards, I give, like, a 5-minute speech on, hey, just so you know, even though it says it's not active, do not go near the fence. And I'll say, did you hear about that guy that works for us? That got almost got electrocuted and got all charged up on the fence. And they're, oh, yeah, I heard about that. Like, yeah, that was me. Mm-hmm.
So real quick, Ken, and then you could say what you're going to say. So basically, every time you go into a salvage yard, you're like, what's his name in Jurassic Park when he's throwing the stick between the fences?
Yeah,
just pulled the rug out from under me.
Oh, I see. Jesus.
But yeah, no, it really happened.
You know what the funny part about that whole thing is?
That kid was a ginger too, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yes, he was.
I'm pretty sure he had red hair.
He was.
Reddish, whatever. It was like Auburn.
The kid, right?
Yeah.
The little kid was?
Timmy.
Yeah, Timmy.
Little Timmy.
Was it Timmy?
Are you talking about Timmy?
Lights and alarms are going off in the ginger.
The first one.
You know what the crazy thing was?
I don't think he had red hair.
What? Somebody got to Google it.
Discord. Put it on our page for it.
So basically, and if you notice, that kid, when he got hit by 100,000 volts, did not die. Do you know why?
Because he has no soul.
Gingers don't have souls.
Gingers can't go to heaven.
They can't go to heaven or hell. They're just
totally not getting my vote for president. Totally
not. Let's see here. Heath Moss says, it hurts like heck, but I'd rather be tased than sprayed with OC any day. What's that? OC.
Oleoresin capsicum. Pepper spray.
Oh, yeah, no. We got CS gas, it was called. It sucked.
We got CS in the Air Force as well. But,
sucked.
Yeah. But no, actually, OC is worse.
Really? Than CS?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It's bad.
So I prefer to not have any of them.
So I'll tell a funny story about when I was in the Marine Corps. We had to do the gas chamber. All right. You guys will like this one. I know we got off Masonic word, but you know what? This happens. And you know what? Yeah. Funny yourself. So I'm in the gas chamber. And when you walk into the gas chamber, you're going into a platoon and you have to line the walls. And, I was in the Air Force Junior ROTC when I was in high school. So they used to call me Zoomy. Flying planes, zoom, 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 you know. So this one particular drill instructor, he had my number because I came into boot camp and I already knew how to march. I knew how to, you know, column left and knew how to column right. So needless to say, I was an easy target. But you get into the gas chamber, and they close the door behind you. Mm-hmm. And they're burning this CS, and basically it's just hanging there, and they burn it, and it just disperses. You can't see your hand in front of your face. It's like walking into a smoke-filled room. So your mask, you have your mask on your face, and the first thing you do with it is you just break the seal of it. And then you put your fingers in the mask, you know, to break the seal. And then once you're done with that, you pull your hand out, pull the straps tight, and you put your hand on the front of the thing, and you blow out with all the air you have in your lungs. Mm-hmm. So you hold your breath, obviously, before you break the seal. And you blow out with all the air, and it farts the mask, and it blows all the CS gas out. And then you can start breathing again. Second time you take it, put it on top of your head, right? And then you put it back on, same thing, pull the straps right, fart the mask, you're good to go. Third time, you hold it out in front of you. Well, as I'm standing there holding it out in front of me, and you could kind of just slightly open your eyes up, the drill instructor looked at me, smile on his face, smacked the mask out of my hand, and cup checked me all at the same time. I'm dying, right? Can't breathe. I just snot and eyes and brain matter and everything just pouring out of me. And he's holding my chest against the wall because they don't let you come out into the middle of the room. Obviously, you knock the table over and get further blowtorch.
Right, right.
So he's pinning me against the wall, and I'm just like losing it, right? So finally, I put the mask on outside, and let me tell you, that was horrific. But I'll tell you what, after all the CS cleared out of my lungs and my eyes and every orifice of my body, I never breathed better in my entire life because there was no mucus anywhere left in my entire body. It was pretty bad. But anyway, that was my funny story about it. But I've gotten only electrocuted by house electricity.
Yeah, no, it's not fun.
I've never got hit by actual crazy amounts of electricity.
I thought 120 volts was pretty bad.
That thing hurts like a bitch.
Yeah. And what's that go up to? Is that 120? Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's probably about 120. Yeah.
So 7,000.
Yeah. 7,000.
And I know Dan's going to chime in and say it's the amps that'll kill you, not the voltage. Yeah. I don't care. It's 7,000 volts. It hurts.
It still hurts.
It hurts. Because Dan is watching.
All right. This has turned into
He looks.
It's turned into a goof show. Sorry, Marty. I know we were talking about some.
He looks pretty gingerish to me.
For those who are watching live,
we found a picture of Timmy from Jurassic Park.
I think the tint is off on this computer here.
No, it's a really nice screen.
Strawberry blonde.
I don't know. We'll bring it to the jury over there. Marty. Yeah.
Let our district deputy.
Ginger? The district deputy. He's the ruling authority here. Ginger or not ginger?
Yeah, ginger.
Ginger.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
I tried.
Gingers can't die. They're daywalkers.
Did you really drop a strawberry?
Strawberry blonde.
But I think it's funny in that movie. Now,
how did we get here?
I don't know how we get here. This is how it happens. It just spirals. We'll have a topic and then poof, it just disappears.
We're from taking a Mason at their word to getting electrified on a fence.
So what I'll probably do is I'm probably just going to take that little section where we didn't go sideways and attach it to the other episode, and this one's...
We'll go back to being serious.
Yeah, we'll go back to me.
You're just going to take out that one.
I'm going to take out that one and isolate it and put it with the other one. And this one's just going to be our screw off with the rest of it. But now, maybe you guys can help me out here. I don't believe wood is not a conductor of electricity.
Correct.
So if you threw a piece of wood like he did in that movie at two wires of electricity, nothing would happen.
Wouldn't have really done anything. Anyway.
No, wouldn't have done anything.
Probably not.
So, yeah, there was not too much ingenious put into that.
Well, I mean, the guy was an archaeologist. He wasn't, like, an electrical engineer.
Yeah, and he let the kid get fried.
Slack. Eh, whatever.
You know what? I got to respect him.
He wasn't really good with kids either. He legitimately said
he's like, let the ginger get fried.
I'm not going on Discord for a week.
Until they turned it on.
Right. Right. They had it off, and then the power was turned back on. I'm going to get lit up on Discord, aren't I? I can see all these little Timmy memes now. Oh, God. They're probably already there.
You're
probably.
Welcome.
So Mason's word.
Mason's word. Reel it all back in. Mason's word. I guess for me, the biggest thing is if you say you're going to do something, my two particulars are events and degrees inside the fraternity. Events and degrees are the two big ones. Dinners, whatever. It is what it is. But some lodges are much smaller than other larger lodges. And there's not a very big pool of Masons to actually do these parts, you know, on the smaller lodges. So everybody has a set part. And when you say you're going to do something, and then in the final moment you pull the plug, it wrecks the whole night.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, more so than it... It hurts the lodge. It hurts the candidate who's going through it.
Mm-hmm.
Because now it's ruined. You know, and again, you really don't remember, you know, your EA or your entered apprentice, or your entered apprentice, your fellow crafter, your master mason, as you're going, you know, later down the road. But it makes an impression on that night. So if it's messed up that night, you might be hindered. That person might be like, "Yeah, that was a shit show. I ain't going back to that."
Or maybe the candidate doesn't even notice what happens, right. But it still puts the leadership in a lodge.
I don't know if a candidate would notice if something was messed up.
Right.
You know, it would be because you're going in blind.
Right.
So you really don't know what's right, what's wrong. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but then again, for things like the lecture.
Uh-huh.
If, you know, someone's giving a first section lecture and they're stumbling through it, you notice.
Yeah.
Even as a candidate, you notice.
Mm-hmm. And that's why one of the things I've always told people is keep your bearing. Keep your military bearing. Mm-hmm. Marty, you know about that.
Yes.
Military bearing. Don't break stride. Don't make mistakes. Don't go, you know, don't be eccentric about it. You mess up, you miss a word, roll through it.
Yep.
Don't stop. You know, because they're not going to know the difference in either way. In pertaining to, you know, and again, I'm not a big. I think it's much more impressive when somebody actually recites the ritual and knows the ritual. Less impressive when they read it. So that's why I'm talking about when the mason gives his word that he's going to be there at the degree and then doesn't. Somebody has to read it.
Yeah, usually.
And then, you know, he's sitting there like, well, why is this guy reading it? You know, everybody else is doing it. Just to me, it's impression points, and that's a big one. That's all I got. Anybody, you guys got anything else for the Mason's word? I'm trying to think of other instances where it would.
I don't really. I mean, the biggest one to me is recently being a sitting master. I mean, mm-hmm. it's really tough when you have to scramble at the last minute to find either somebody to pro tem, depending on what the position is. Sometimes it's easier than other, like. We're blessed with having a lot of past masters that show up to degrees, knowing that we're probably going to call on them to like sit as Tyler or like sit with the candidates in the back room. And that's one thing. I mean, it's really nice to have that. Smaller lodges, less active lodges may not have that same safety net.
Right.
But to do like a lecture or something like that, to say that you're going to be there and do the lecture and not show up, or to let the master know at the last possible instant, and not have somebody ready in the wings to take over for you. I mean, it puts way, like a huge amount of pressure on the people that are running that degree.
This also applies to those who are going to take an officer position. That's a big one.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I want to be the junior steward. Yeah, I want to be the junior warden. Yeah, I want to do this. And then you're a no-show for at least half the meetings. That's tough, especially the higher chairs you get. Because, you know, the stewards, nah, whatever. There's not really much work for you in a regular stated meeting. But once you're starting into deacons and wardens and secretaries and treasurers and, you know, there's some throwaway chairs that are just like, whatever. Marshal, historian, you know, it's more of just a warm body. Some lodges use historians more so than anything. But stewards are kind of a throwaway. You should be there, but if you're not...
Well, I mean, you've got to run refreshment.
Right.
No, that,
if one steward is missing, it does impact.
Well, I'm giving an example of like a basic meeting.
So for like
just a regular stated, we're going to show up, we're just going to run through what we got to run through and get the hell out of there. Like, no, there's no refreshment, you know, because our lodge, if there's nothing going on, we don't do refreshments. We'll do donuts or something afterward, whatever. You know, that's anybody can pick up donuts. Yeah. But it's the big ones that are like.
Well, my feeling is if you're going to be absent a meeting, it should be incumbent on that officer to find your replacement.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
If you're not going to be there, hey, guess what? You get to find your replacement. Don't throw it on the master at the last second.
That's a good point.
Could not agree more.
Yeah, that happens a lot. That used to happen with me. You, there. Well, I don't know it. Sit. Figure it out. Grab a book. Yeah. It's not hard. You have 3 lines. Read it.
Yeah.
Corey Lady, unless it's in English, you can't read it, and we better not have an open cipher in a tiled lodge. That is in my district, is what he says. cipher. We don't really have a cipher.
No.
He's talking about the cipher, like the ciphered right. thing, I guess, in wherever he is in his in his current jurisdiction, the whole thing is right. ciphered.
Well, actually, Connecticut used to be like that up until, what, 95 or thereabouts, I believe?
I think so.
Because Right Worship Brother Dave Sharkus showed me the actual old cipher book that he learned from, and everything was coded. Everything except for...
Working tools. Remember.
Working tools, I think.
Yeah, I think I remember seeing that book. Yeah, and working tools are whatever. They're nothing. It's fruit flies. They're all over the place. Mm. We got to get apple cider vinegar. But
yeah, they only seem to come out when we are physically in this room.
Yeah, no.
Like when I never... first show up and we're like opening stuff up, they're not. We can't find them anywhere. No.
All the time.
We're sitting in the room.
Your son attracted them. I think he's got bugs.
Or they're like living in that old crappy laptop of yours. I don't know. I don't know. Or like in the soundboard. I've got nothing.
All right, brothers. What do you say? California he's from. So in California, it's ciphered. So. All right, brothers. What do you say we wrap this up? We had enough fun for one night. What do you think?
Sure.
All right. For the Freemasons podcast, this is Right Worshipful George Mudry signing off.
Worshipful Brother Joe signing off.
Worshipful Brother Ken signing off.
Right Worshipful Brother Marty McCary signing off.
Timmy!